and welcome to the A to Z Sports Big Orange Podcast. I am Charlie Burris. That is Zachary. Wherever you listen throughout the world, we thank you so much for listening to us. Zach and I talk everything balls every week here on the Big Orange Podcast. And if you want to listen to that on the reg, go over to the A to Z Sports Podcast Network feed on Apple or Spotify. When you get there, rate, review, but most importantly, subscribe. If you do subscribe, you won't miss our shows when we drop them on Mondays. And speaking of Mondays, it is one right now at 7 p.m. Eastern time. And you can go to the A to Z Sports Nashville YouTube channel. Subscribe there. Hit that notification bell. If you hit that notification bell, you'll be notified when we go live. And then you can be a part of the show. You can comment. And we love going back and forth with the commenters and having a good time. It's the best. So go over there and subscribe on YouTube, too. At Charlie underscore Burris, at Zach TNT, at A to Z Sports, Facebook.com/A to Z Sports, Nashville, A to Z Sports.com. For everything that Zach writes on the internet. Oh, boy. I feel like it was pretty fitting. Sunday, beautiful, gleaming day here in East Tennessee. And today it was just gloomy all day. Just like thick cloud cover. And that's exactly what it felt like. Tennessee went to the Elite Eight. Beat Creighton. I did a quick live on Saturday about Tennessee beating Creighton, and it was awesome. Incredible win. You make it to the Elite Eight for the first time since 2010, only the second time in program history. And you run into, I don't even know what you would call Zach Edey, a physical freak, an anomaly in terms of how
tall he is,
how tall and how fouls are called on him. Oh man, what's up, Zach?
Yeah, it's a rough one. Man, that game had so many moments where we were just like, okay, this is a certain loss, then they're right back in it, and you could taste it. It was there. They're in the game. It's tough to swallow. I know we'll get into it here in a minute, but that's that one's gonna take a bit to get over.
Yeah, we're going to talk about it all, of course. But it's not just that. For tonight's show, obviously going to get into the men losing the Elite Eight. But midday today, Kelly Harper fired as the coach of the Lady Vols. And we're going to discuss that, too. An interesting move to make from Danny White on April Fool's Day. I think a lot of people were like, is this really? Real?
We'll get into it in a second, but it took me a moment. I'll tell you real quick. I saw the tweet from Dan Harrelson, who we know and has covered Tennessee for a long time for various outlets. He's with USA Today, Vols Wire, or something now. I think he was the first one I saw tweet about it. And I was like, that's a pretty, we know Dan. So that's a pretty un-Dan thing to tweet on April Fool's, because I thought it was a joke at first because I'd seen nothing else, no tweet alerts. I opened my email up and saw the email from Tennessee. And even then, I was still like, okay, who is this person that's sending this? What list is this coming from? Is this all legit? Is this? She just never know on April Fool's. It was definitely an interesting day to do it. But there was a reason, which we'll get into.
Yeah, for sure. Going to discuss that. And then there was a little bit of news on the football field. Obviously, spring practice continues on, but a little bit of recruiting news, actually. And we'll get into it all on the Big Orange Podcast tonight, right after I tell you about our great sponsor, Farm Bureau Health Plans. Farm Bureau Health Plans has been serving Tennesseans for over 75 years. Much has changed in Tennessee over the years, but some has stayed the same. Farm Bureau has always valued personal relationships, especially when it comes to good health and good service. Plan on Farm Bureau Health Plans for health, dental, and vision. For better coverage, better rates, and better service, go to fbhp.com/ATOZ or walk into one of their 200-plus locations across the state. That is fbhp.com/ATOZ, Farm Bureau Health Plans. Huge shout-out to them. Thank you, as always. Well, we're getting right into it here. In the comments, Volunteered says, I don't want to blame the officials for the Vols loss, but their bias towards Edey is disgusting. Yeah. let's get right into it. Tennessee went into the Elite Eight, I think a 3-point underdog to Purdue, ended up losing by 6, although they were right there in the final moments, had the game tied in the final 2-3 minutes. And I haven't brought myself to watch it again. I'm not sure I ever will to verify when all of that happened time-wise. But the thing was this. Dalton Knecht went for 37. It was insane. One of his best games of the season. And Zach Edey went for 40. And that wasn't the singular difference in the game, but it was close. And I guess I'll start here with you, Zach. Edey goes for 40, goes to the line a ton. Tennessee gets out-rebounded like crazy because of Edey. There's a ton of questionable moments where a foul could have been called on him, and it was not. How did you feel about the officiating in that game? Do you give it the credence of that was the game right there?
Not quite. I wrote a column about this probably about an hour after the game while everything was still kind of fresh, which can be good and bad. It's an interesting like time capsule of capturing your feelings right after the game. And sometimes, I mean, I do that obviously with a lot with Tennessee sports, and a lot of times I'll look back the day or two later with some clarity and be like, I don't know if that's the right take or not. I mean, I think everybody kind of goes through that in this kind of hot take world we're in. But I look back at what I wrote yesterday and I still feel the same way. I don't think it was the game. I think it was an obvious issue. I think the calls that Zach Edey, you know, that were called against Tennessee on Edey, you kind of expect that. That's the game. He's a huge guy. How do you defend that? How do you stop it? Especially with Tennessee, where they don't have, you know, a dominant big guy really to defend him. Estrella did a nice job when he was in the game, but Adu and Awaka, obviously Awaka fouled out right there towards the end, I believe. Yep. That part wasn't that big of an issue. I don't even mind that strategy. It's kind of like the Hack-a-Shaq strategy because he missed some free throws. He's not the best free throw shooter in the world. Make him earn the points instead of just giving him easy buckets in the lane. That part's not that big of a deal. I think most fans and most people, if you look at it objectively, it's the fouls that weren't called on Edey, which has been a problem all season long. He's averaging an absurd like less than 2 fouls a game or something like that. He played 39 minutes in that game and did not get called for his first foul until there was about 10 minutes left in the second half, and that was an obvious push on a loose ball situation. There's so many fouls. There's a couple that were called on Tennessee against Edey when he was like throwing guys to the ground, you know, boxing out. There was Edey diving for a couple of loose balls where he's not even really touching the ball. He's reaching over just, you know, whoever is diving for the ball, and he's just kind of on their back and they're calling a jump ball. I'm like, that's a foul. You cannot just jump on somebody and say it's a jump ball. You kind of gotta have a hand on the ball. It's gotta be kind of legitimate. That part was the bigger issue to me. I don't think that's the singular reason they lost the game. I think it's a combination of all that. It's the fact that Dalton Knecht was the offense. The rest of the team had a rough day. Getting out rebounded by, I think it's like 47-26, 46-27, mm-hmm. something like that. It's tough to win games. The fact that it was even as close as it was is a miracle when you're giving up that many rebounds and second chances. So the poor shooting day, Purdue didn't play their best, really. I mean, they didn't have a tremendous shooting day. They left plenty of opportunities for Tennessee to get in it. I think it was just kind of the perfect storm of not getting those calls against Edey, because that could have made the game a little bit closer, not hitting some shots from guys not named Dalton Knecht, Adu not playing well. I think all that stuff just kind of combines for what was a letdown. It wasn't a colossal letdown. It wasn't like the Mississippi State game. It wasn't anything like that. I mean, they were in the game right until the very end. They can play with anybody in the country. You know, maybe, I don't know about UConn. They're on a heater right now that I feel like this is just their tournament to lose anyway, but clearly you still want to get to the Final Four, especially with Alabama making it, because now we're going to have to hear about that for the next 11, 12, 15 months till, you know, however long until maybe Tennessee gets back in this position. But that I can't blame the officiating for the loss in this one, but it certainly was a factor in the way the game played out.
It was a factor. It is crazy, the whistle that Edey
gets. It's two things. Now, teams do foul him a lot. Tennessee fouled him a lot because you just, to hinder him at all, you have to play him so tough.
And there were some good fouls, too. You know, there were fouls where they stopped him before he got to the basket. It's like, make him shoot the free throws. That I'm fine with that.
Yeah, make him work for it if you have the guys that can give up the fouls. I mean, in this game, I was going to look. What was he at the free throw line? Yeah, I mean, he missed 8 free throws in that game. Yeah,
one of them was an air ball. But
yeah.
I think the game was in hand then.
It was close, but yeah, he left points at the line for sure. And so that strategy is justified. But some of them were not fouls. Some of them were ticky-tack nonsense. That if it was the game prior against Creighton would not have been called. If it was being called in a similar way to the way that was, where Tennessee was truly allowed to be physical and kind of bang around. And that hasn't been allowed against Zach Edey the entire season. I don't know what it is. What is it with this kid?
I mean, there were loose balls that it felt like, if anything, it's a no call. There's a couple where I thought Edey fouled Tennessee, right? Like we went through that, but there's several. It might have been when Awaka fouled out, when he fell to the ground and Edey kind of fell on him. That was a foul on Awaka, and that's a no call. You know, that's just basketball. Sometimes that happens, but you're giving him the benefit of the doubt every single time down the court.
The thing that there's been tons of videos on Twitter all season long that he does is clearing out on rebounds. Is that he just kind of swings his elbows around and he's absolutely gigantic.
Yeah,
he throws bows and he did it against Tennessee. It happened 2-3 times where he's clearing out, throwing guys backwards. There was a moving screen that I thought they missed against Zakai Ziegler. It wouldn't have gone against Zakai Ziegler. It was Zach Edey on Zakai Ziegler. And it was those things where I just go, what are we doing here? Like I get the hack Edey thing. I mean, I even said it last week. That's what Tennessee should do there. But outside of that, I mean, what is he? Is he just slipping cash to these boys before every game? Like, what's happening?
And it's not a Tennessee thing at all.
It's not. No, it's been all season.
I was looking for some stats this morning that was hard to track down on some of these foul calls, you know, dating back to last season. I ran across an article from a Michigan State SB Nation site from a year ago. It's the exact same complaints, almost word for word, that Tennessee fans had about Zach Edey. And that's Michigan State. They're in the conference with Purdue. They see this all the time. They see it all year long. You know, you're watching Purdue basketball if you're a Michigan State fan, probably. It's the exact same complaints. I mean, this is nothing new, and it's not – I mean, you can kind of see it a little bit on social media, like, oh, there go Tennessee fans again. But, no, this is something that I feel like anybody that's played against Purdue is like, yes, we know what you've been through.
Yeah, and you don't even see a ton of pushback from Purdue fans themselves. I think for the honest ones, there is a feeling of like, yeah, but hey, he's our guy. So, I would be.
Three-star recruit from Canada that didn't start playing basketball really till he's a sophomore in high school. Suddenly just plays flawless defense for 39 minutes a night. I mean, it's unbelievable. There's just no way. No one does that.
I will say the play that he made that was the real deal. And, you know, I think if Purdue goes on to win a national championship, will be a seminal moment for them, is that block against Connect right at the end. And it was totally clean. It was a great block.
Yeah.
Connect was forcing it. You know, he was just trying to go for the score and because it was a desperate moment. And yeah, I mean, it was a great block. Now, with all that
was
said,
the part I think at the end of that game that was kind of frustrating too, is they were trying so hard to get Connect the ball. And at that point, you've got to have other guys step up and score.
Yeah.
I mean, they were on Connect. They were defending him. They were doing all they could to prevent him from getting the ball and really having to make him work for a shot that just wasn't there. And that's, you can talk about the fouls, and yes, that's part of it, but not having somebody else to step up in those moments at the end of the game, that's a big part of why I think they lost.
It needed to be Zakai or Triple J. And the tough truth about this game is, and I, you know, maybe some folks won't agree with me, Tennessee had a really good chance to win this game. And there's real argument to be made that they should have won this game. Because what they missed, you lose by six. Tennessee missed so many, specifically Adu. And Zakai missing a missed. I mean, he had a terrible day shooting. Zakai shoots 40%, and Adu makes two of those, you know, whatever, mid-range shots. Tennessee wins that game. It was that close. Not razor thin, but right there. You get a couple of calls on Edie, it would have been different too, but, you know, it was just that, like, the shots had to fall in. Adu, I feel bad for the kid. I mean, he got pushed for J.P. Estrella in that game. J.P. put in some serious minutes in that one and played the cleanest out of anybody in terms of fouls against Edie.
And he was defending the pick and roll.
Yeah.
All game. You could really tell if you watched him. He played some excellent defense in the minutes that he had to play. Yes.
He really did. I mean, Terry says, what happened to Adu? Seemed like he was intimidated by Edie. I don't know if it's intimidation or he's just skinny. Just not bulky enough.
It's tough to... I mean, he had a tough time against Baycott, you know, back when they played UNC earlier in the season, and Baycott kind of had his way in that game. We've said it all season. That was kind of Tennessee's kryptonite is going against the big man, and you're going against the biggest man in America, and Zach Edey. It was always going to be a tough matchup. But even with that, the game was still there to be won.
For sure. I don't know that I would go this far. Jody says to me, it feels like the NCAA wants a UConn versus Purdue championship game. I would think that if UConn wasn't beating everybody by like 40, they're ridiculous.
I mean, I feel like UConn and Purdue is such a regional game. Purdue basketball, outside of Indiana, you don't see people sporting Purdue shirts and this and
true.
That. And UConn's a little more. I mean, that's a big brand. But I think people get tired of seeing UConn there and in the mix. I never really buy into that. I mean, I'm sure there's matchups that would love to see, right? That are more compelling than others, just like when the Super Bowl comes around. But to me, I would think like NC State, DJ Burns, like that's what you want in the finals, right? That's what everybody wants to see, I think, at this point.
If he can actually stick it to Edie, the March legend.
Burns is a better basketball player than Edie.
He is.
Edie's not a finesse guy. I mean, at one point I saw Edie. I mean, I'm sure you all saw it. He was trying to make a move inside. I can't remember who was defending him. It might have been a Waka. Could have been Estrella. It definitely wasn't Adu. But he threw the ball throwing a rock up against the backboard and just bricked it kind of off the side of the rim. Just like this frustrated move. And I was like, if that's DJ Burns, he's kind of finessing the footwork there. And he's hitting a turnaround jumper in that moment. He's not just throwing it off the backboard out of frustration.
I mean, I texted y'all, I think, during that Connecticut game. And in my opinion, Donovan Klingon is probably the best big man in America. And I think he has the best chance to actually give Edie the business. And that would come in the national championship game. If what's on paper is correct, Connecticut should dispose of Alabama relatively easily. And the thing with Klingon is that the team around him is a lot better than what's around Zach Edie. Not that the rest of that team is terrible, but they are not Tristan Newton, Cam Spencer. Like some of the guys that are on that Connecticut team, they are built from top to bottom with just dudes. Dudes are really good, all playing well, all at the same time, at the best time of the season. That's just Connecticut right now. That's what's happening. But with all that aside, ultimately, this still came down to shots. It could have been the exact same. And again, couple shots from Zakai, couple shots from Adu in that mid-range, you win. And it's that simple. Because you got 37 from Connect, and those shots from those guys still went up, and they just missed them. You missed the shots that would have won you the game. And so I can't put it all on the refs. and Edie. That's egregious, but you knew it was coming. You knew it was going to be that way. I mean, I guess I might have liked to see Barnes go crazy on the sidelines, maybe try to turn the tables there. But
well, there was, I think it was Grant Ramey from VolQuest, I think. It was there covering the game, and he tweeted a picture out and said, "This is Rick Barnes at every dead ball." And it was him in a referee's ear. You know, who knows what the conversation is there, but I'm sure it had something to do with Zach Edey. Yeah. And literally no fouls being called until the game was nearly over. I don't know. I mean, it's been a narrative for so long. It's an interesting comment here from Michelle. I do wonder if it's so loud after this game, because it did become a big topic, you know, yesterday evening into today. Do the refs kind of call a little bit more now that it is this loud narrative, and not because of that, but you hear that noise. Refs are human. Obviously we know that. Some of that's got to seep in a little bit, like, okay, we're paying a little bit more attention here to Zach Edey. We're going to see what he commits here on the defensive end of the floor. I could see that seeping in a little bit to the way they call that game. Hopefully for hopefully for them it does.
Yeah, I definitely could see that. I just want a Final Four so bad.
Well, and now we just don't want Alabama to get any further down the road than they are, honestly. I hate being that way, because listen, it was super annoying yesterday and today to see the Kentucky fans just celebrating Tennessee's Elite Eight loss. Some Vanderbilt fans doing it. I don't even know why they were. I have no clue why they would be saying anything. I'm not one. I mean, yeah, you want to watch Alabama lose, right? You want to see your rivals lose, but it's not. I don't know. I'm happy they lost, but it's not a celebration for me. I don't feel like.
No,
but I don't want to see them advance to a championship game. Anyway.
Absolutely not. I'm 100% rooting for Connecticut in that game. No doubt about it. But I don't know. It just is so frustrating, because you look at last year, you play FAU. Look, the year before, you play a crappy Michigan team. Well, I don't know, crappy. But you were better than them for sure. Heavily favored in that game. And then you actually play to your seed. You make it to the Elite Eight as a 2 seed, exactly like you should as a 2 seed. And of course, you have to play this guy. Of course. That's the Tennessee way. Oh, we made it back to the Elite Eight. Well, you got to play the hardest game possible. That's what has to happen. Can't play Clemson like these D-bags at Alabama. Oh, no. There's no way that you could be that lucky.
Who let us down in the Sweet 16? Who played Purdue in the Sweet 16?
Wasn't that a Grand Admiral
team? No, I meant this year.
Oh, I mean, they won by like 20. I can't think.
Well, whoever
UNC,
it was.
UNC let us down on Alabama.
Yes. Yeah. Big time.
I,
of course, their team was so old, they probably got tired.
That's true. But Purdue's really good. You got to give them the credit where it's due. And that is what it is.
Gonzaga. It was Gonzaga that let us
down. Yeah, that's right. That's right. And it was close.
Jason hooked us up there.
That was close, late going into that one. But, I mean, still, man, that is just so frustrating. Because it's just how it has to be when you're Tennessee, isn't it? This is how it has to be. If you're going to do it, it's going to be the absolute hardest way possible. It's never going to be easy. You're going to have to play Creighton, the actual 3 seed in the Sweet 16. You beat them. You actually won that game. And then finally make the Elite Eight again. And
I think we can officially quit caring about the path, because Tennessee's tried all different methods and it's just not worked out. I will say the one thing coming out of this game, and I haven't been on social media a ton today, so I don't know what really the discourse around this is, but losing it in the Elite Eight and the narrative with Rick Barnes and struggling in March, I'm not sure it's going to apply here, because you're in that game. You can't control the Edey situation. Your best player had a brilliant game, you know, almost going for 40 points. The rest of you guys just weren't hitting shots. What can Barnes do? And I mean, Purdue wasn't really hitting shots either. You know, they were, I think they were like 2 of 13 or something like
Edie,
that.
Edie was their entire team. Edie was it for them, just like Connect was it for Tennessee. They didn't have a complete game. That's what's so frustrating, is that if you have a complete game like you did, say, at Alabama, this is a win. You would have won. You played to a level earlier in the season that would have won you this game. And that makes me so ill. That's the thing that makes me so ill. Just like in past years. I would say I am, you know, dejected for sure, but not dejected as much as I probably was, specifically that Michigan game. That might be Barnes' worst game. Because that team was, it wasn't as good as this year's. Both Kennedy Chandler, anything could have happened.
Mm-hmm.
But this one, yeah, you played your seed, so I can't say that you underperformed or anything like that. But this game was there to win. Oh, it hurts. Oh, boy. Maybe one day Tennessee will be back. Lord knows. yes, Ben, I just disagree. The foul discrepancy was 33-11. That's absurd. That's completely ridiculous. I'm not denying that, but you knew that was going to happen. You knew that garbage was going to happen. Everybody said it for, you know, 2 full days before that game happened, and you still were in a position to win. You were still in the position to where if Adu makes those mid-range shots and Zakai drops in, you know, one more three, maybe two more threes, you win. I don't know. What do you want me to say? That's the truth of that situation. All right. Anything else with basketball, Zach, before we shelve it for a few months? Fun, really fun season, though. Really fun season.
Go hit the portal hard. You're going to have to. I mean, you got some lot to replace here. Losing Dalton Connect, which was kind of the heartbeat. Well, I don't want to say the heartbeat, because that's Zakai is like Barnes has said, he's changed the culture and brought such a important mindset to this team. But losing Dalton Connect is tough. I mean, that's a lot of production to replace going into next season. Yep. You're not going to find another Dalton Connect in the portal like that, but you got to find somebody that can possibly take over a game late. I don't know. It's going to be tough, but that's got to be the main objective now, starting, you know, today for Rick Barnes and company.
No doubt about it. But if an incredible season. Sad that we won't ever see another game in orange for Dalton Connect, but be happy that it happened. Not sad that it's ending, you know, something like that. I just, I love these seniors.
What do you think about the, I feel like we would be remiss if we didn't mention this, the Zach Edey, Rick Barnes comment about being overlooked and all that kind of nonsense he said at the post-game press conference. Not, I didn't really have a problem with him saying that, by the way, because it's the whole Michael Jordan thing, right? Make it personal, even if it's not legit. Whatever you got to do to play your best on that particular night, use it. Like, I'm fine with that. I'm big on using that kind of stuff for motivation. But the reality of that situation is that's not really what happened at all. Like, Barnes was at Zach Edey's practices because he was at IMG Academy. Nobody at IMG Academy gets overlooked. You don't get scholarship offered to Purdue and Baylor if you're overlooked. Fact is that he was a low-rated recruit that hadn't played a lot of basketball. It was pretty raw. He was playing behind Armando Bacot, Mark Williams, Brandon Huntley Hatfield, several other big guys there at IMG. Tennessee had Uros on the roster at the time, so they weren't searching for another 7-foot-plus guy that might be okay, might not. You don't really take a flyer on those types of guys in college basketball. So that whole narrative just wasn't accurate, I felt like, coming from Zach Edey in the post-game presser with that kind of shot he took at Rick Barnes.
You know, he didn't fit what Tennessee was looking for at the time. Still really doesn't even now. I mean, that's not the game that Rick plays, really. Obviously, you would hindsight 2020, you'd love to have a kid like that. But yeah, I mean, you look, I'm looking at 247. He was not even a high 3-star. He was just the number 33 player out of the state of Florida, the number 75 center coming out.
He's from Canada. He had just started playing basketball and went to IMG, which we know is a huge school for athletics in Florida. He'd played some like hockey, some other sports before he even started playing basketball. Hey, this guy's super tall. Why would you not put him on the court and see what happens? Yeah.
I don't know. It just is. I can't stand Purdue. I hate them more than most SEC teams at this point with everything that's happened. And it's just how we keep crossing paths. I hate it. No more. I don't want to play Purdue in anything for the rest.
It's always forever. Some sort of controversy at the end. Basketball,
every time.
Football, doesn't matter.
What the heck is that? We can't just have a normal game against Purdue. The last Sweet 16, this Elite Eight,
the
Music City Bowl. Can't do it. Ah, boy. I think that's it with basketball. Yeah. Now let's talk about kind of the wildest news that came out today. Kelly Harper got fired as the coach of the Lady Vols. Her time is over. We're going to discuss it after I tell you about Zyn Sports. We've been telling you all season long about Zyn Sports, the new sports betting app exclusively in Tennessee. And now when you sign up for a Zyn Sports account, you'll receive up to a $1,000 no danger first wager. That's right. When you place your first bet in Zyn Sports, you can be reimbursed for the amount of your bet up to $1,000 maximum if that bet loses. But there is even more good news. Zyn Sports is rolling out its brand new VIP rewards program. The new VIP rewards program will allow top-tier customers to earn more bonuses, comps, and perks, but it is by invite only. So if you feel your Zyn Sports play qualifies for VIP consideration, check out the program at zynsports.com/VIP. No other sportsbook will offer you a premier sports betting experience with 24/7 top-tier customer support and faster withdrawal like withdrawals like Zyn Sports. So what are you waiting for? Get going and download their app at zynsports.com. Today, Zyn Sports betting just got better. If you have a gambling problem, call 1-800-889-9789. Terms and conditions apply. Must be 21 or older in Tennessee to bet. Zyn Sports. Something that I think a lot of people wanted but probably weren't betting on, speaking of Zyn Sports, was Kelly Harper being fired. I was one that if you had asked me, over under of one, it's Kelly Harper firings this offseason. I would have said under because I didn't think they were really going to do it. Historically, at Tennessee, there has been just in every sport, kind of this, wait till it's too late, just give somebody way too much time. It was already over and you knew it. We should have ended this a year ago. A lot of that in the past. And we haven't gotten to see a lot of Danny White in that particular situation.
Thank goodness.
Yes, for sure. A lot of sports have been going awesome under Danny White. But here's the thing. It appears Danny White don't play that. He is cutting this off at the pass. And he said, second round exit is not good enough. When you have the statue of Pat Summitt outside of Thompson Bowling Arena and a coach who all but, I don't want to say invented the game, but invented it in terms of the modern sense almost, was there the entire time in the rise of women's basketball. And you have that figure in your history. It's just, yes, you've made it to every single NCAA tournament ever. Oh, and Kelly didn't miss one. Played in an SEC championship game, didn't win it, but played in one, almost beat South Carolina. A lot of the hanging on to Kelly fans brought that one up. Oh, they played South Carolina so close. Yeah, that's great. But you didn't win. Danny was not the AD that hired her. I think ultimately, I obviously appreciate Kelly Harper a lot because, formerly Kelly Jolly, she was an amazing player for Tennessee on some of the best teams that Pat Summitt ever had, multiple national championships as a player.
Three, I think, right?
Yes, I believe that is correct. One of the best to ever do it at Tennessee and an incredible figure that it was very cool to see come back to Tennessee. But ultimately, I think it was a little bit of a lazy hire by Phil Fulmer. She was there, had taken Missouri State back to an NCAA tournament, and he just kind of said, yeah, let's hire Kelly, even if she's not the absolute best for the job, because you also had like Vic Schaefer at Mississippi State on the table then. Now, it made sense for him to go back to Texas because he's a Texas guy. There's a lot to talk about there. But when it comes to this hire now, it makes complete sense to me. And you and me both advocated for this weeks ago, actually. And now it finally has come to fruition. And I think it makes complete sense. Well, yeah, let's start there. What'd you think of the firing, Zach?
Yeah, I said earlier, I was surprised because I didn't think it was actually going to happen either. They lost their last game a week ago. It happened today. We know because the buyout dropped basically by half, pretty much. She's owed 50%, I believe, of what she was owed through the end of her contract, whereas she just fired last week. She's owed 100% of what she was owed through end of 2027 or something like that. So financially, if you're going to do it, it had to be today. And I also thought it was interesting that it was today because you've got the biggest women's college basketball game of the year happening right now with Iowa and LSU. And you've got all this hype around Iowa and Caitlin Clark and LSU and South Carolina basketball. And Tennessee's just not in that picture at all. And we've said this countless times. No one's expecting this program to go back to what it was when Pat Summitt was in charge. I don't think there's anybody on this planet that can get the program to that. She was that special of a person, of a coach. We know it. You don't put statues up of Pat Summitt for no reason. But being in the conversation, being in the mix, that's really, I think, all you need. Yeah, the ceiling for this program is always going to be a national championship. Whoever is hired has to be able to get Tennessee back to that point, not asking them to reel off, you know, multiple championships in a row, but be there, be in a Final Four, be in a marquee game on a Monday night that everybody wants to watch. I mean, this Iowa LSU game has been so hyped, and it just feels so weird that the Lady Vols have just kind of went by the wayside since 2012, it seems like, when Pat Summitt stepped down. They just haven't really been feared. They haven't been a factor nationally. That's the part that when you see baseball doing well, you see football doing well, you see basketball make it, you know, to an Elite Eight, almost to a Final Four, softball doing well, all these things are doing, sports at Tennessee are doing so well, and the Lady Vols are just kind of stuck in neutral. They're stuck in mediocrity. They're not terrible, but they're not elite. They're not championship contenders. They're not getting past the Sweet 16. They're not making it past the second round this season. They're not able to finish off an upset against South Carolina when they should have won that game. I mean, just those things, it all adds up. It's like it could not continue on. And I don't know what the right answer is. I think you got to trust Danny White on this. He has a really good history when it comes to hiring coaches. The Josh Heupel hire has worked out better than anyone would have imagined. He made good hires at UCF and at Buffalo. It's what he does. He identifies talented coaches who know how to win, who fit a culture, who fit a program, who fit what Tennessee's doing right now, who can fit in with Heupel and Barnes and Vitello and kind of the vibe that you got going on here at Tennessee. I trust that he's going to make a good hire. Now, I don't know if it'll work out. There's no guarantees, right? But I think he's gonna go out and try to find somebody dynamic that can breathe some life into this program and bring some excitement back to the Lady Vols name, because it's ultimately what everybody wants. It's just be relevant, just be there, just be in those big games. That's what we've been missing.
For sure, it has just not been enough. We said it in weeks past. We don't need you to be Pat because you can't be Pat.
And that's going to be tough if you're Kelly Harper and you played under her and that's what you know. That is who you are as a person. It's like the Nick Saban syndrome and how so many of those coaches have struggled.
It's got to be incredibly frustrating. But ultimately, you just have to face facts that's just not good enough for the standard of that program. And it's kind of that simple. That's really the beginning and the end of it, ultimately. But now, well, let's talk about some of the potential hires here. I'm not going to act like I'm an expert in who could be hired as Tennessee's next head coach.
Yeah. Who would you want to see?
The one that makes the most sense that you're going to see get brought up a lot is Wes Moore from NC State. They are in the Final Four right now. He's had a phenomenal season. He's had a phenomenal career. The guy's won like 800 games in his career. He is an alum of Tennessee and Johnson Bible College. Ironically, I looked this up this afternoon, actually. He coached at Chattanooga for forever. He's just, he's very, and he coached at Maryville College for a really long time out in Blount County. And, you know, he's just really familiar with East Tennessee. And then he's at NC State. He's been very successful, a bunch of Sweet 16s, finally a Final Four and an Elite Eight in the last 2 years. Had a ridiculously good season last year, 32 and 4 2 years ago, and then 31-6 this season. They finally made the Final Four. But that's the one I think you're going to see get brought up. The problem there is that he's 66 years old. Mm-hmm. You're going to be just pushing the fact that he's a little too old to be there for very long. But I don't know what you do from here. I've seen a lot of people with the Grand Canyon coach. You, no offense to her, you're better than the Grand Canyon coach. Yeah, I haven't
understood the resume there. There's nothing exciting about the resume, especially if you're moving on from Kelly Harper, when her resume, when she was hired at Tennessee, was less than stellar.
No doubt. So other than that, you're not going to make a run at Dawn Staley. As much as, I mean, as I said before, you got to maybe knock on that door at least. Hey, see.
You interested? Yeah. Maybe, work something out.
The one that gets brought up, Chris, says it here, Kara Lawson. No.
She's saying I had up and down, right? I mean,
yeah. No more former Lady Vols unless they've reached a bunch of Final Fours and,
I know that the whole alumni thing always is popular, but at this point, have we not learned our lesson on that? I mean, yes, it worked out with Philip Fulmer. Lady Vols, it hasn't really worked out. I mean, there's like when T. Martin was brought up to be the head coach at Tennessee during the 2017 search. I love T. Martin, but he has no experience, and as a head coach, really barely had experience at that time as an offensive coordinator at USC, and things weren't going great there at the time. You can't hire somebody just because they graduate from Tennessee. Like that doesn't guarantee anything. And at this point, we're just interested in wins, right? Like whoever can get the job done. I don't care if Josh Heupel went to Oklahoma. I don't care if Tony Vitello went to Missouri. Like none of that matters.
I graduated from Tennessee. And you want the job? Exactly. It does to me, that just doesn't matter. So I dig deeper. Like I said, I think Wes Moore is the one you're gonna get brought up a lot. Is that ultimately it because he's so old? I'm not sure, but you got it.
Doesn't seem like a Danny White hire, really.
No. He has historically gone for up and comers, tried to make kind of the intelligent, like I'm smartest man in the room kind of hires, and it's worked out for him, no doubt. He gave Nate Oates his first big time job at Buffalo, and Nate Oates is in the Final Four. So there's history there that he can be good at this. Kara Lawson, I mean, her best season was 26-7, her best finish in the NCAA tournament, Sweet 16 this year.
Yeah. What are you gaining?
Nothing, because that's exactly what it was for Kelly Harper. Now, do with all of that what you will. Because I just am not sure where they go at all here for Danny White, because women's basketball is just not the same as men's, because there's a bigger difference between the top teams. There's not as much of a middle ground and a lot of up and comers like there is in men's college basketball. There's just a bigger span there between the two. Not sure where he goes. Very, very interested to see, for obvious reasons. I mean, it is one of the most important programs here. And does he spend money? That's a huge question.
He could like set a new trend of throwing some money at, and with all the money in college athletics, I know it's not a big revenue driver, but at the same time, there's so much money flowing through just various channels at this point. You know, make a lucrative offer. Tennessee is a much more attractive place to coach. You know, take the Lady Vols brand out of it in general, and that aspect of it. The job, even without that, is more attractive just because of the success that everything else is having. The renovations, the money that's being pumped in to facilities right now. Danny White's not just sitting back, kind of being reactive to anything. He's been very proactive in everything he's done since he landed at Tennessee in 2021. That's got to be attractive to, you know, you talked about the alignment between administration and coaches, and it's kind of a cliche line that everybody says when they take a new job, but it really is. It's super important to people when they take these jobs. It's not, I say this all the time, it's not a Wikipedia page where you just pick and choose and place people where you want them because they were coached here, coached there. Like, they're real humans. They have to interact with staff, administration every single day, and it's their workplace, and you have to be in a place that you like going to, and that's really the only way you're going to have success. We've seen the alternative when it's not aligned and how disastrous that can be. Went through a decade of it. That's not the case anymore. So I think on that aspect, it's going to be easier to hire somebody this time around than it was when, you know, when Kelly replaced Holly.
It does. I don't know. I just, excited really is the right word, though. I don't want to make it sound like I'm dancing over the fact that Kelly got fired. In fact, I want to say respect to her, and she's been a great ambassador for the program, and we appreciate that. But Danny White has a nice history of coaching hires, obviously. I'm excited to see what he can do because it's a very unique hire. It's a very serious hire here, and it's one that also you're not sure if they're going to shell out a bunch of money. It's a lot of different factors there. It'll be very, very interesting, and we'll obviously keep tabs on it.
He gets to do his whole thing that he loves to do when he shrouds his search in secrecy and throws out a few smoke screens here and there. He even said that in his statement that he released today, like, you will not hear from me until the hire is made. And I think that's an aspect that I think all athletic directors like that, to be honest. We saw it with John Curry. He just wasn't very good at it because he's meeting Mike Leach by a pond and people see him. But Danny White gets to go down that road again. I think he gets fired up to do that kind of stuff and kind of throw people in curveballs here and there.
Well, hopefully he brings the heat. Yeah. Because it's a great opportunity. We shall see, and we'll cover it. Now, let's finish with this. Not a ton of action with spring ball. It's just been a slow trickle of kind of information. Just this guy looked this way and these things, a couple injuries that have happened, but largely not a ton to discuss as far as spring ball goes. We'll do that closer to the spring game. But you had some interesting recruiting news, which, I mean, we haven't seen almost anything out of recruiting for Tennessee. And what even was the last?
Ethan Utley, 4-star.
Okay, yes, that's true. Recently. Yeah, that's right.
Get for okay. Tennessee there. It was the first one they'd picked up in a little bit. But you know how recruiting, it kind of takes off spring, summer months when these official visits start happening. That's when you'll really see some players start coming off the board, which we're getting into that time right now.
We definitely are. Yeah, I don't know why I forgot that with Utley, but nice pickup there. But you had Steve Wiltfong. It went to on three. He was at 247 previously, and there's a little recruiting news for the landscape. He has been the go-to for the crystal balls. You know, you kind of, when you see Wiltfong bring the crystal ball, you're like, okay, I think we know what's going on here, typically speaking. And guess what happened today? Steve Wiltfong in his new gig at on three, he logged a crystal ball for Laganza Hayward, who is a safety, a 4-star safety for Tennessee. And I feel like I've said this for years at this point with Heupel. Any top-notch recruiting on defense with the way that Heupel plays defense is unbelievable to me. And this would be an incredible pickup. What do you think seeing this one, Zach?
Yeah, well, your first point there, defensive recruiting has, you know, it's been much better than I expected. That's a testament to Heupel. It's a testament to the defensive staff. Whoever is responsible, they've done a nice job. They've landed some nice players. Making sure that Boo Carter didn't leave the state was one of the biggest recruiting moments, I think, in this program's, I don't want to say history, but in the last 10, 15 years, because I think he's going to be a really, really good player for Tennessee, really exciting player, already playing super well. But, yeah, anytime you can go into Georgia, the state of Georgia, and get a prediction for a safety that has offers from Florida, Georgia. I mean, Georgia's in the mix for this player. This isn't a guy that Georgia doesn't want, which if he commits to Tennessee is what all Georgia fans will say. I'm not going to say that he's the top player on their board, but he's a good player they'd like to have. He's a top 100 overall player. He's not that far from being a five-star. He's not going to be a five-star, but he's just outside of that realm, right? And that's the type of player that you kind of need to win a championship. And he pretty much straight up told Wilt Fong that his exact quote is, "I think my future is going to be bright in orange." He hasn't committed yet, but that's about as close as you can get to committing without committing. Safety with length, speed. It's the type of player you got to have in the SEC. If you're going to compete for championships, if you're going to beat some of the best teams in the league on a weekly basis, whatever it is you want to accomplish, you got to have rangy, athletic safeties out there that can be ball hawks, that can not get beat over the top, that can contain some of these really fast vertical threats that are in the SEC. You got to have guys like this. So anytime you can get a top 100 player on the defensive side of the ball, I think it's huge. And you beat out Georgia for him, that's even more impressive. And Tennessee's showing they can beat Georgia in some recruiting battles for some pretty serious players, which is something we haven't seen in a long time. I mean, they beat Georgia for Mike Matthews, the five-star wide receiver that Georgia tried to get an NIL deal done with, and it didn't work out for him. He went to Tennessee, and he's doing well in spring practice. They're right there with Georgia for Travis Smith, another four-star wide receiver that both programs want. Ultimately, we'll see how that one plays out. And Georgia's going to win more of these in Tennessee because it's really tough to beat the in-state school no matter what, especially when it's Georgia. But just the fact that you're starting to win some of these battles and you're right there in the mix, it's something Tennessee hasn't done in a long time, and you're doing it against arguably the most successful program in the country over the last several years. That's huge. I don't think we can overlook that at all.
No doubt. Big moves being made. Hopefully that one does come to fruition. We just got to actually get the kid committed. And,
in December, that's the biggest thing.
Yeah. It did go and look. The Utley pickup got him over Texas and Auburn, looking at 247. Even still, four-star defense.
Texas, right? That's a playoff team, right? I mean,
yep.
They're expecting to be an SEC team. Again. Yeah. I mean, that's going to be some of your big competition here for some of these, recruits in the Southeast. Because Texas is going to, Texas is Texas. They can fill up a class without hardly leaving the state, but they can go get guys too. I mean, they got Arch Manning out of New Orleans without really any connection to the Manning family or anything like that. So they can win some big battles. You're going to have to beat them too for some of these guys. That's nice that they're one of the ones that was in the mix for Utley.
Absolutely. We'll see what happens. And I think that's a show. Charlie Burris, Zach Reagan, thanks so much for watching. The next 2 weeks, I'm going to be gonzo. Not sure exactly what we're doing there, but I'm going on vacation. So sorry about you. But I did do the show for vacation last year, though, from an incredible room in Sedona, Arizona.
I remember that. You're like, laying on a bed or something when we did this or
something. Unbelievable view in that one. It was awesome. But not this year. And we'll have to have those discussions. not sure what I'm doing, but we'll see. Charlie Burris, Zach Reagan, thank you to everybody who watched, who commented, hung out with us. It means the world. Couldn't do it without you, as I always say, and I mean it. That is it. Well, it'll probably, knock on wood, Lord knows what'll happen around Tennessee. Probably a slower week, but again, God knows around here. So we shall see. But thanks again for watching, and we will talk to y'all next week.
See you guys later.